1 John chapter 2, verse 1 says, "My little children, I am writing these things to you so that you may not sin. But if anyone does sin, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ, the righteous." Oh, yeah, we studied that last night at our Bible study at church. Hey, good to see you today. Good reminder from 1 John chapter 2. Well, good Thursday, this 14th day of October. Welcome to Mark and Friends here on Great News Media. I am your host, Joey Kroll. I've been hosting the Thursday program for Mark and Friends for several years, so look forward to it. It's almost pretty much a staple in my week, and I hope the same is true for you. Well, the temperatures are, well, they're getting cooler. I've been having to, I'll tell you what, I've been having to pull out a couple of sweaters out of the closet this week, and it's just a reminder that summer is gone, and I'm not sure if it's going to be coming back. And really looking at the forecast, you know, temperatures like around 70, so yeah, I think summer is kind of a distant memory for sure, so welcome to autumn, I'll tell you. Hey, did you get your copy of the Prime Life Times, the October edition? Prime Life Times is the publishing wing of this radio ministry, and it has articles that are really informative and positive and engaging as well. So, check out where you can get your free copy of the Prime Life Times. By the way, my article is in there this month. I have a monthly column called The Wayside Chapel about the high cost of sin, but also the high cost that was paid for your sin and mine. Check out where you can get your copy at primelifetimes.com, primelifetimes.com, and check out the distribution list as well. Hey, you're going to be in for a great treat today. We are going to hear an encouraging word today. You know, because we live in a day and age where it's just almost easier just not even turn on the TV. You know, just kind of dig your head in the sand. But we're not called to do that as believers, though, I'll tell you. But it's so easy to get discouraged. And so today we're going to hear a special talk that the late Elizabeth Elliot did at a campus crusade convention many years ago in Kansas City. If you remember, she was married to the Reverend missionary Jim Elliot. And after 3 years of marriage, he was killed in the mission field as he was reaching a people group for Christ. And she continued really his missionary work by ministering to and living with those same people and leading them to Christ. Just a fantastic, fantastic story that only the Lord can write. And so today we're going to hear a special word on the path of endurance, the path of endurance from Elizabeth Elliot. I think you'll be edified. I think you'll be encouraged. Coming up right after this here on the Thursday edition of Mark and Friends.
Lord, your Lord reigns in
Sovereign Grace Music, and we will glorify. Good to spend some time with you today. I and Joey Kroll here on Mark and Friends, here at Ministry of Great News Media, and let's prepare our hearts today for an encouraging word from Elizabeth Elliott, as she gave a talk to many students many years ago at a Campus Crusade convention in Kansas City. She clearly experienced some severe personal tragedies in her life, but remained steadfast in her trust in God. And so here's her encouraging word on the path of endurance.
A few generations ago, a young Scottish athlete was put to the test. An athlete put to the test, you say, so what else is new? Happens all the time. It's the only way to become an athlete. Training, coaching, endurance, tests. The one I'm talking about was put to a test not by his coach, but by his God. With every chance of winning a gold medal, this man went to France to run in the Olympics. The test came the minute he got off the boat. Somebody told him that his race was to be run on Sunday. You know who I'm talking about, Eric Little. I heard somebody say that. The man in the film, Chariots of Fire. Little was a Scottish Presbyterian. Running a race on Sunday was to him unthinkable. Do you remember what happens next in the film? Does he get in touch with his feelings? Do you find him sharing his hang-ups with 38 of his closest friends? You don't see any of that. The decision is already made. The decision has been made years before. As a matter of fact, when he made up his mind to follow Jesus Christ in obedience. Jesus was Lord of Eric Little's life. That settled a whole lot of things before they even came up. Little was a man who knew what really mattered. Does anything matter that much to you? The Quechua Indians in the jungle of Ecuador had a very handy word that worked for an answer to anything. The word was yanga, and it means for nothing, for no particular purpose. I remember one time a young Indian came to my husband Jim Elliott and told him that he wanted to be baptized, and Jim said, why? And he said, huh? And Jim said, why do you want to be baptized? And he said, yanga, for nothing, no particular reason. Well, Jim said, you're going to have to come up with a better answer than that. What do you live for? Yanga? I want to tell you a little bit about that missionary, Jim Elliott. I knew him when he was a college student. As far as we women could see, he was unattainable. Handsome, popular, champion wrestler, president of the Foreign Missions Fellowship, honors student, campus clown, but alas, a woman hater. That's what we thought. And incidentally, guys, if you want them to swarm around you, let them think you're unattainable. Give them something to wonder about. But we were way off. Jim Elliott was no woman hater. He had found out when he was in high school that he could spend an awful lot of time and money on girls. They were very attractive and very interesting and very expensive. And so he decided when he got to college that he would just delete them from his schedule. It sounded like the men that were cheering on that one. He wanted something much more important. He had made up his mind that he wanted 2 degrees, a Bachelor of Arts, which the college was qualified to confer, and an AUG, which the college was not qualified to confer. The one he wanted most was AUG, approved unto God. He got that out of the Apostle Paul's letter to Timothy, and he had made up his mind what he wanted to live for. I found out how resolute Jim was in this decision when the college yearbooks came out. And we girls would hope forlornly that the man that we had our eye on might put something besides his name in the book, something sweet. And it was with great trepidation that I presented my book to Jim Elliott, asking for his autograph. And very fast, with his flowing, rapid hand, he wrote, Jim Elliot, 2 Timothy 2:4. How long do you think it took me to get back to the dormitory and get my Bible to look up that verse? I was desperately hoping for a cryptic message. There was nothing cryptic about it. It said, a soldier on active service will not let himself be involved in civilian affairs. It's not the end of the verse. He must be wholly at his commanding officer's disposal. Now think back to Eric Little. How had he gotten to be a champion runner? Well, by putting himself at the disposal of a coach, by learning the rules, by being obedient. Obedience to a track coach is bound to involve a tremendous amount of something called endurance. Whatever it is you want, it's going to cost you something. Eric Little put his gold medal on the line. Jim Elliot, his life, ultimately. If it's God's will you want more than anything in the world, it's going to mean endurance. During Jim's junior year, he went through what he used to call an exercise, a wrestling with God over some issue. In this case, the issue was marriage. Paul, the Apostle Paul, wrote quite a bit about the advantages of being single. He wished that everyone were, as he was, single. And Jim had a sneaking suspicion that that was exactly what God might be calling him to do, to remain single for the rest of his life. It had nothing to do with being Jim's thing. It had nothing to do with his temperaments or preferences. He really did like women. But his response was, okay, if that's what God wants, that's what I'm going to do. The test for Jim Elliot was falling in love. Anything wrong with that? He was swept off his feet by love for a girl. She had been attracted to him for a long time and had been wrestling with God over the same question of singleness. And like Jim, had finally said, yes, Lord, if that's what you're asking, I'll do it. I'll be a single missionary. I remember that commitment very well. I was that girl. I remember Memorial Day, 1948, just before I was to graduate. Jim asked me to go for a walk with him. Jim Elliot asking me to go for a walk, I nearly died. Could hardly breathe for excitement. I tell you this because I want you to know that I've been where you are. I know your feelings. Well, Bet, Jim said, guess we better get squared away about how we feel about each other. I nearly went through the sidewalk. Feel about each other? What gave him the idea that I had any feelings for him? I thought I'd been doing a terrific job of concealing my feelings. I wasn't just playing hard to get. I was determined to be just like Jim, impossible to get. What were we to make of this tornado of passion we suddenly felt for each other? Did it mean that God wanted us to forget all the agonies we'd gone through over our singleness struggles and just fall into each other's arms? We had a few weeks before graduation. We took some more walks. We did some more pondering and praying alone and some more talking together. One night we wandered into a cemetery and found ourselves sitting on a convenient marble slab, trying to sort through what God was trying to tell us. I said that it really didn't make a whole lot of sense to me to tell God that we wanted him to handle this whole thing if we intended to keep our hands on. It was going to have to be hands off, turning it entirely over to the Lord. You see, after graduation, there wasn't much chance that we were going to see each other because Jim had another year in college. He lived in Oregon. I lived in New Jersey. He was headed for South America. I thought I was headed for Africa or perhaps the South Seas. Does it make sense to you? I asked him. Should we write? He didn't say anything for a while, and then we sat there in silence, and finally he said, you're right. It doesn't make sense. And I know you're right because this morning the passage that I was reading in my Bible was about Abraham and Isaac. Abraham made the sacrifice. He tied the son down on the altar and he raised the knife. And I knew right then that God was asking me to give up the most precious thing in my life, you. Would I give it to him or would I refuse? I said I'd give it. So that's where you're going to stay, Bet, he said, on the altar. Unless God shows me that I don't need to make that final sacrifice. And there was another long silence. And then suddenly we realized that the moon had risen behind us and was casting the shadow of a stone cross between us on that slab. We wanted, above everything else, the will of God. And here is the crux of the matter. And by the way, did you know that the word crux means cross? Until the will and the affections are brought under the authority of Christ, we have not begun to understand, let alone to accept, his lordship. The cross, as it enters the love life, will reveal the heart's truth. I'm convinced that this is the point at which many young people refuse the cross, refuse to endure hardship. Jim and I waited 5.5 years before God gave us a green light to get married. It was a test. Were we going to trust God during all those years of silence and separation and uncertainty? Mind you, we had no commitment to each other. I haven't time to tell you the rest of the story. I want to say this much, that on our wedding day, the Lord gave us a verse from Isaiah. This is our God. We have waited for him. It was worth it. Is it worth it? How many things can you think of that are worth suffering for? Let me tell you a story. Once upon a time, before you were born, there were in Ecuador a tribe of so-called savages. Not very much was known about these people. They were naked, they used stone tools, and they killed strangers. Nobody had ever gone into their territory and come out alive. Missionaries had been praying that God would enable them someday to take the gospel to these Alcas, but it had never happened. One day in October of 1955, Jim Elliot instituted a program of dropping gifts to those Indians with the hope that they would be able to break down their hostility and prepare the way for an attempt to reach them. You can imagine our excitement, our trembling, the prayers that went up. And on the evening in January of 1956, just before these men left, they sang together that hymn, "We Rest on Thee, Our Shield and Our Defender." A week later, they were all speared to death. Why? Why would God allow a thing like that to happen? He was their shield, their defender, and he let them get speared to death. Is it worth it? How many things can you think of that are worth living for? I want you to listen, ladies and gentlemen, young men, young women. There is nothing worth living for unless it's worth dying for. Have you made up your mind? The verse that brought assurance to me was 1 John 2:17. The world and all its passionate desires will one day disappear. But the man who is following the will of God is part of the permanent and cannot die. Jim Elliot wrote in his diary when he was 22, "He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose." He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. I don't know what particular endurance God is asking of you right this minute. Perhaps it's in your love life, in the willingness to submit your longings and to wait patiently for God's best for you, to stay out of bed. God is saying, I have something infinitely better for you than you can imagine. Will you trust me? Will you wait? Will you obey me? My husband and I live on the coast of Massachusetts. Do you know what motto is posted in every rescue station along the coast? You have to go out. You don't have to come back. That, I believe, should be the motto of every Christian. You have to go out. You don't have to come back. Jim Elliot often used to quote a poem written by Emmy Carmichael of India. Hast thou no scar, no hidden scar on foot or side or hand? I hear thee sung as mighty in the land. I hear them hail thy bright ascendant star. Hast thou no scar? Hast thou no wound? Yet I was wounded by the archers, spent, leaned me against a tree to die, and rent by ravening beasts that compassed me. I swooned. Hast thou no wound? No wound, no scar, but as the master must the servant be, and pierced are the feet that follow me, but thine are whole. Can he have followed far who has nor wound nor scar?